Anybody who's raised a kid will tell you parenting can be hard work. But we don't always think of nurturing our children as the same kind of hard work as going to a job. Raising our own kids doesn't earn us a paycheck, and it doesn't always carry the same value in society as a job outside the home. Our next guest says mothering in particular is undervalued, and she writes, quote, "We must start by acknowledging mothering as highly skilled work that deserves respect and compensation." You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like parenting, mothering in particular, is undervalued in some way? Have you ever added up the value of all the different tasks you do while raising a kid and wondering, what does a job like that pay if we put a dollar value on it? Did the pandemic change the experience of parenting, especially for the moms out there? Was it more isolated? Did you feel like on your own even more maybe than you had been before? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Angela Garbez is a writer and author of the book Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change. Angela, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
It's kind of this weird paradox. I think we put a lot of cultural and symbolic value on mothering, but not a lot of, I guess, practical and financial value on it. Make the case for rethinking and changing that a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, cultural and symbolic value doesn't really get you a lot in the real world. I would say, here's the case. We're both adults, and we didn't make it here on our own. Somebody gave birth to you. Somebody took care of you through the helplessness of infancy. Someone made sure you got to school on time. Someone helped you read. Someone taught you how to bathe yourself, clean yourself, and did that for you before you could do it. And that care that we give babies, even though they've done nothing to earn it, really, except be born, why do we not value that as people get older, right? No one makes it through life without being cared for and mothered. And that doesn't always just happen from a parent. It happens from a beloved teacher. It happens from a grandmother, an auntie, chosen family, mentors. And really, this basic care work, mothering is really tending to our physical and basic emotional needs. It's the work that makes all other work possible. If you didn't know how to feed and dress yourself, if you didn't have a roof over your head, you wouldn't be able to go out and do other things in the world, you know, professional work. But I really believe that caring for ourselves and caring for our people is the only real work humans have to do. And it's about time we start talking about it as essential labor.
Yeah, you put it in the context of the, you know, American economy, the global economy. We think of productivity as, you know, the jobs we're making stuff, selling it to each other and that sort of thing. You use the phrase, and others do, reproductive labor. Without the labor that goes into raising kids, none of that other stuff can happen. It's kind of like the there's this big, you know, under the iceberg, to use the cliche, that we're not seeing.
Yeah, no, that's a great way of putting it. One thing that American capitalism has never fully dealt with is that we rely just as much on domestic labor, which happens in the home and is expected for free from mothers or for very low wages for professional domestic and care workers. The economy doesn't run without it. And we really saw this in the pandemic when child care centers closed, when nannies and babysitters couldn't come to our homes. We were all lost. And people found that it was very difficult to do professional work and to do domestic work and care at the same time. It's more than one person can do.
Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Deb is with us in Waukesha. Deb, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Deb?
This is such an important topic. I will share that I am 63 years old, and it has just dawned on me in the last couple years that I should have been receiving a paycheck from the family budget for being a stay-at-home mom. And I believe that without that, we lose our sense of a sense of power and a sense of value that is needed, especially at that time when we're staying home watching the children. And if we had to go out and do those services, as you're hearing from the other callers, it would be so expensive and so valuable. And I think every stay-at-home mom needs to be paid for what they're doing.
Deb, thanks for the call. Angela, what do you think?
I think everyone should listen to Deb. Right on, Deb. I think that we should reframe it. So, yeah, you can say, you know, in America we say, oh, she's just a stay-at-home mom, or I'm just a stay-at-home mom. But how about I'm the CEO of my household? I'm the chief executive officer of household logistics, right? I am the household manager. We really need to reframe this. Like, she's exactly right. Like, these skills of, you know, oh, there's so much creativity involved. There's so much thinking on the fly. There's so much multitasking and so much management. You know, out in the professional world, we pay higher wages for that. But in the home, because it's private and because we like to think of it as quote unquote women's work, we think it should be done for free. But no, this is something that I thought about a lot in the pandemic, which was a lot of the seed for this book, which is that at the very beginning of the pandemic, when I was home 24/7 with my children for 4 months straight, and I knew that was the most important job I could be doing, keeping them safe and keeping my community safe and healthy. And I was hearing about how, you know, we were talking about essential laborers, healthcare workers, the doctors and nurses who were treating us, you know, sanitation workers, teachers, and all of those people are yes, essential to our society. And then I thought, what about us? What about parents? What about mothers? Because I'm working all the time, and it feels pretty darn essential.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking Angela Garbez, author of the new book, Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change. Angela, you mentioned workers who do a lot of the jobs that we associate kind of in the mothering job description, house cleaners, childcare providers, and others often being paid very low. Often, you write, these jobs being done by women of color in particular. Can you talk about your hopes for them as well?
Sure. So I think, you know, as long as we're reckoning with some of the things in America that we've never fully reckoned with, the reason why we are comfortable paying women of color, and the majority of people doing this work are Black and brown women, and the majority of them are mothers themselves. So the reason why I believe we are willing to pay them less or expect this work for very, like, you know, poor wages is because of the history of slavery in America. The home has always been a site of work for Black women in this country. And when, you know, feminism in the 1960s told everyone, Betty Friedan said, you know, find meaning outside of the home, that's great. But we never got rid of domestic labor. And so we started hiring Black and brown women to do those wages. And domestic workers are 3 times as likely to live in poverty as any other worker in America. And that's really shameful. If we are entrusting people with what we say is the most valuable thing, the most important thing in our lives, those are our children, and we can't pay them a living wage, what does that say about us as a society? You know, what does that say about us as individuals? The median wage for any worker in America is close to $20 an hour, which is already barely enough to make it. But when we look at domestic workers, that drops to a median wage of $12 an hour. And the lowest median wage in the country is for nannies. That's $11.60 an hour. So I think it's really a myth to say that this work is unskilled labor. I think that's the way we justify paying low wages. But really, all work is real work. If you've ever taken care of a child for longer than 15 minutes, you know it is not unskilled labor. You have to know how to soothe that child, how to calm them. And it's so fundamental to our existence as a society, and it's a shame that we don't value it the way that we should.
We're talking with author Angela Garbez about her latest book. It's called Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think motherhood, not as an idea, but as a set of tasks, as a work, a job in a way, gets enough recognition? Do you have an experience you'd like to share with us? Do you have a question for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation. Maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Angela Garbez. She's with us today sharing her latest book, Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change. And you can join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your own experiences as a mom with your questions for our guest, 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Carol is with us in Hillsboro. Carol, hello.
Hi. I had the privilege of being a stay-at-home mom. We had five kids, and I had two that were in grade school, and then a baby, a two-year-old, and a four-year-old. And my husband came home from work one day and said, "What do you do around here all day?" You know, I guess the house was a mess and dishes weren't done. So I started writing down what I did every day, and then I checked it off like I actually had a list. And I threw a couple things in there that I didn't do. And then I did that for 2 weeks, and then I gave him a bill for being an accountant, a laundry person, a chef, a housekeeper, a daycare and nanny, and a personal shopper, and he couldn't afford me.
Carol, thank you for sharing that that experiment with us. Angela, what do you think?
More people should do what Carol does. And there's actually, I applaud Carol for keeping that kind of record and information, because it's a way of showing people, you know, these things that we take for granted, we can't. There's so much that goes into it. And I invite, actually, listeners, I did this, and I write about it in the book. A journalist named Amy Westervelt created something called the Invisible Labor Calculator. And if you Google this, you'll find it. And she used Bureau of Labor Statistics and data to assign value to different household jobs, you know, whether that's gardening, shopping, as Carol had mentioned, you know, nannying, childcare, and tending to the emotional and psychological needs of your family members. So you can put in what, you know, the amount of time you think you spend doing that every week, and it will calculate for you, based again on U.S. government data, what your salary would be. And so I did this at the beginning of the pandemic, and I was shocked to find out that I was so shocked, actually, that I did it twice because I didn't believe it the first time. But the Invisible Labor Calculator told me that I would be making over $300,000 a year in my job as a stay-at-home mother and caregiver. And that would be the highest paying job I've ever had by three times, more than three times. And that's something that, you know, that's what Carol did years ago. And I think that it's really important for people to see that, I invite people to try that and to start to begin to really think about how valuable their work is within the home. Oxfam actually did a study a couple of years ago and said that in the U.S. alone, if women were paid minimum wage for all the unpaid labor they did in the home, it would be worth $1.9 trillion.
Thanks.
And that is money that is not counted in our economy, and it should be.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Courtney joins us now in Madison. Courtney, hi.
Hi. Mine is a little off the topic of in-home care because my child's in daycare, and my husband and I are just completely appalled at the amount that we pay but how little the care workers make in daycare. And I was curious if your speaker has any thoughts on the role of government in helping to support that. And particularly, we've been discussing in our family how in Canada, they're working really hard to get $20 a day daycares, and that's supported by the government. And in BC, $10 a day daycare. So I was just curious if your speaker had any thoughts on that.
Courtney, thanks. Angela, go ahead.
Oh, Courtney, I do. I think that we all do. Parents are all overwhelmed, right? And we're stretched. And we do things to make community all the time. We take care of each other's kids. We do play dates, right? But we are not, there's a structural failing here. You know, we tend to feel like because things are happening in the home, they feel like individual failures that we have, or we feel like, how do we solve the problem of like giving our beloved caregivers more money, right? And this is really where the government needs to step in, right? We have privatized all human rights in the United States. Like, you're not guaranteed health care or housing, early childhood education, or an education, you know, as you get older. Other countries have figured this out, which is not to say that other countries are perfect, but other countries believe in valuing people and investing in people. And I don't know about you, Courtney, but I personally voted
in this administration, the Biden administration, because they ran on things like care infrastructure, paid family leave. They also ran on codifying Roe v. Wade. And they've really bargained away those things. In Build Back Better, we, the Democrats, let those things slide. You know, we recently passed a new package in all provisions to supply, to fund care in the home and to fund early childhood education centers were, you know, sort of let go as collateral damage to make a deal. And the people who represent us need to know that that is a failing on their part and they are not making good on promises. And at this point, we need investment from the government. Working people, working families are doing everything they can to make ends meet out here, and this is not working for us. And yes, our electeds need to hear from us, and the government needs to do more.
Thanks for the call, Courtney. Leah joins us next in Lafarge. Leah, hello.
Hi. I was going to say that when I was out of work during the pandemic, I decided to fully embrace being a stay-at-home mom and to see what that was like. And I did a lot of the same things that I did when I was working, but I had more time to do it. And what I found was that I still wasn't able to stay on top of all the mess with all the people, with it all being just one person's job. And so I felt, you know, my husband was still working, so he's paying all the bills. I didn't necessarily feel like I needed to be paid. I just felt like I needed to be very much appreciated because it is like that invisibleness of the work. Because if you're not having to pay all the bills, like that's a load off of your back. But it's just in that those chores can be, you know, done and forgotten, and then you know you got to do them all over again. So I'm kind of making a case as the mom or the dad, or even better as a teen, being the household manager to enlist labor from everyone, and that's better for moms, it's better for dads, and it's better for the kids to be participating.
Leah, thanks a lot for that call. Angela, what do you think?
I think Leah is right on, for sure. You know, I was in a similar situation where I put my work on hold because it's my husband's job who gives us a paycheck, who gives us regular health insurance. And as a freelance writer, I don't get those things. And part of why I wrote this book was born out of all of the feelings I had in being a caretaker, missing my professional work, and really feeling like acknowledgement would go a long way. I mean, I do think that we deserve wages for the work that we do, but any kind of acknowledgement and appreciation does go a long way. And one of the things that I did is I talked to my children, you know, about this. I said to them, you know, when I'm feeding them three meals a day and snacks and seemingly every hour, I would say to them, you know, I do this because I love you. And I will never stop doing this. But this takes work for me to cook dinner, for me to wash your clothes, for me to take care of you. That takes energy and time. And we really need to name this stuff as work. And also to pick up on something Leah was saying, it's too much for one person to do. And that's another thing about modern American life is that we live in nuclear families. We really prize, you know, one mom, one dad, and 2.2 kids. And it's just not meant how we were meant to raise kids. Throughout the entire world, for centuries, we raised children communally. So, you know, if it feels like too much to cook, 21 meals a week for your family and to do 7 loads of laundry, it's because it is too much, because we do need help from our partners, from other household members, from even our children, but also we need help from friends. We need help from an extended network. We need chosen family. And that's another thing I saw in the pandemic. People forming pods, people taking care of each other's children, having family dinners and kind of throwing their lots in together. I think that's a very human urge to want to be taken care of and to take care of others. And it's healthier and it's emotionally very wonderful. And I think we could all lean into that a little bit more as the pandemic, it's not over, but as it sort of recedes more into the rear view, I don't want us to give up that interdependence and that realization that Taking care of ourselves is work, and that we cannot do it entirely alone.
Just very briefly, Angela, we've just got a minute left. We haven't even touched really the second half of your book. You were hoping to make mothering a joyful experience and raise happy kids. Can you leave us with just a minute thought on that?
Yes. I mean, it's easy to focus on all of the things that are hard, but I wrote this book in part as a celebration of caregiving because it is so fundamental. And when you don't have to worry about where the next paycheck coming from, when you are able to do those things in community and really be present with your children and then be present with yourself, it can be some of the most meaningful, joyful work. You know, when I get down, I don't really like imaginative play, but when I get down on all fours and meow like a cat with my three-year-old, I mean, it brings something to my life that I can't quantify. And it is also realizing that I can teach my children joy. I can show them that they are valuable just as they are. They don't need to go have a job to contribute something to the world. And that's really what mothering is day in and day out. It's insisting on our value and our worth, and that will serve children for years to come.
Angela, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob, and thank you to all your wonderful callers.
That's Angela Garbez, writer and author of the book Essential Labor, Mothering as Social Change.